This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming live for the Build 4 Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason and Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Tuesday morning. I know Boomer's fired up after another drubbing of the Islanders by his Rangers. Today is a franchise tag deadline day, and T. Higgins got slapped with it again yesterday. Doesn't look like Sam Darnold is going to get that franchise tag from the Vikings. Never expected to because of that number. So he now is going to become officially available with no Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers being 100 years old. Would Sam Darnold consider going to the Giants? Would the Giants consider him for their next quarterback in this year that means so much to Daboll and Shane? We find out about Luis Hill. There's good news, bad news, glass half full, glass half empty with that injury, but he is going to miss a lot of time. We'll get into all of it this morning, and CeeLo is back, who's over $7,000 with his bike tour charity, raising money, all because he was doing nothing, and you brought it up on Friday. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yes, how do you think I'm doing? I think you said it. I'm doing well this morning. Yeah. I mean, the Rangers looked great last night. They shut out the Islanders, and this JT Miller trade looks to be unbelievable as he unlocked Mika Zibanejad on top of it. Ranger fans know this. This Will Borgen guy that replaced Jacob Trouba has been playing great for half the money. I mean, the goalies have been great. This was probably one of their best defensive efforts that I've seen all year this year, and it looks like a completely different team. And could this be a team in the last 20 games that makes one of these significant runs? I don't want to get over my skis on this whole thing. They are tied for a wild card, but however, the teams in front of them do have a game in hand, but they haven't played hockey like this, and they, quite frankly, they played well against the Maple Leafs on Friday night, and they probably could have won that game as well. So they are playing great. The goalies are playing great. Blocked a lot of shots last night. And yes, I am very, very happy with that performance. But, you know, they're still growing to go to do. And I still think that Chris Drury, while he may not be big game hunting today, I think he's going to be big game hunting over the next 2 years. And you can just follow the contracts and look at what's going on and look who may be off of a contract in a couple of years, who's going to possibly be a free agent in other areas. So I still think they're big game hunting for the future. But right now, I couldn't be any happier with the way that they played last night. So that's great. As far as Luis Hill is concerned, that is horrendous news for the Yankees again. I mean, that is just, I mean, it just keep the hits keep coming. And they were going to, they were going to rely heavily on him, probably to give them a minimum of 150 to 175 innings. That's what I would have thought. And I don't know if he'll even be back this year. You know how these guys are.
No, he will.
I don't know. I'm telling you.
It's a lat strain, which is severe, that they said. But at the same time, dude, there's no surgery with that.
It's no surgery. It takes a lot of time. It's at least a three-month injury. And then you know how they...
I mean, it's just March now.
But you know how they are when the guys come back and all of a sudden they go out and throw and they have a little discomfort, a little tightness, and then they shut them down for another 3 weeks. I mean... What is reasonably expected from last year's Rookie of the Year? What could you reasonably expect? Maybe a July return?
Yeah, I mean, and that would be great if that were the case, that he came back and was the same guy last year. I know it's asking a lot. I just, when you hear the shoulder thing, you think surgery, you think out for the year. That's all. The two things, shoulder and elbow, and this even explained.
This is lat.
Right, and you explained to me, but they had said.
Impingement, not impingement.
Right, no, I know, but they said shoulder MRI at first. So anytime you see elbow or shoulder MRI, you think, okay, surgery done for the year. So they come back, they say severe lat strain, which I thought part of that
was positive in the fact that there's no surgery. So he should come back. Yes, I know that these guys take forever, but these seasons are so long. We talk about it in all these sports, and baseball is the longest, and the Yankees are good enough in the American League to sustain an injury like this, get him back in July, and then have that be a boost for him.
Getting him back would be like what?
Yes, that's right. Yes, like an big trade acquisition at the deadline.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go, because that's really what it's going to come down to. But, I mean, it's just amazing how many guys are getting injured. And then, of course, you know, for the Mets, good news, Kodai Senga went 2 innings instead of 1 and then 2 on the backfields because he wanted to compete. I love that. Wanting to compete in spring training, that's awesome. And he hit 96 yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that.
Yeah.
I think the better story was David Peterson and how well he pitched and how well he has been pitching. So the Mets have to rely on those guys. They got to rely on David Peterson. They got to rely on Clay Holmes. And they certainly have to rely on a healthy Kodai Senga. So, yeah, so far so good with those guys. But it's also basically, I mean, you got to take every spring training outing or whatever with a grain of salt. You just want these guys to be healthy. Just be healthy.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It really is.
Yeah, just get to whatever it is, March 27th, with as many healthy guys as you can and keep them healthy.
You know what? These pitching labs are important. And, you know, they got to keep these guys in these pitching labs as opposed to putting them on the injured list.
That is true. Got to keep them in the lab.
I mean, listen, this, what has transpired, like, from the days of Tom Seaver, you know, Bob Gibson, Steve Carlton, all these great pitchers, Nolan Ryan, let me just go out there and throw gas and smoke and not worry about my shoulder, not worry about my elbow. You know why? Because they had the right mechanics. And they didn't have all these 97 different pitchers, the ghost forkball, the sweeper, you know, all these different things, the hard sliders and all this other crap. I mean, they just went out there and pitched.
Yeah, and then every time we talk about this, people do bring up the fact that, you know, when you start playing baseball at a young age now, you're throwing all these pitches at a younger age and it puts more wear and tear on your arm. And it's unfortunate, but that's where we are and it's never going to change. At this point, it's never going to go back the other way.
I know. It's amazing. Now, honestly, how much would those guys be worth in today's dollars if they were pitching and pitched as many innings as they pitch per season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would.
I mean, those are the halcyon days of the great, truly the great starting pitcher.
I mean, you saw Steve Cohen give Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer $40 million a year at the end of their careers. I mean, just think about what those guys would be getting in their prime. Yeah.
For those of us who grew up during that time and could always count on the same guy every 5 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. I don't remember really, and maybe it's just my foggy memory, or maybe I just have a better outlook on my childhood when I was a fan of these teams. I don't ever remember guys getting hurt and being treated so tenderly.
No, it didn't happen. No, it's the exact opposite. But you think about, like, the money, what guys would make. Like, imagine being a guy coming off an MVP season, you know, being a lefty quarterback, a leader, took his team to the Super Bowl, you know, won an AFC championship, and then hitting free agency after that. How much that guy would make? That guy would make in 2025?
You know one of those guys?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. You think it would be like 50 million?
I'll tell you one thing. I would not be sitting here. That's for sure. I'd be sitting on a beach somewhere flying a private jet around.
You know, I didn't bring it up the other day because I didn't want to, like, annoy you. Yeah. But, like, when I was going through all the quarterbacks that are making $50 million per year.
Per year. This is not their entire career. And I'm not complaining. I did really well, and I've had a post-career that's
Remains, though, that you and what you did then, if you did it now, you'd be making $50 million. That's all you're saying.
Man, all I know is I'd be on Further Lane in East Hampton on the ocean. That's all I know. That's where I would be.
Yeah.
That would be in the summertime.
Yeah.
You know, in the wintertime, I don't know. Probably down in Miami somewhere.
Oh, Miami. You don't strike me as a Miami guy.
I don't know. I'd probably have a place out in the mountains in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, like, people don't understand, like, the amount of money that these guys are making.
I think we understand.
Which is great. I mean, like, so in 1987, we go on strike. Mm-hmm. At that time,
I was the highest paid player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand this.
True.
I signed my contract in August of 1987. And Chris Collinsworth was waiting outside the room after I had signed the contract, and he couldn't believe that I just signed a contract that was for $1.2 million a year.
Mm.
He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that the Bengals gave somebody $1 million. And I couldn't believe it either, because, you know, you grow up in East Islip, Fawn Court, Country Village, Hexter State Park in the backyard, you know, one car, three bedrooms, one bathroom.
Mm.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, you got to understand, like, that
of course.
Moment. That moment
Absolutely.
Was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then, like, 5 weeks later, we're on strike.
And you're laying in front of buses.
Yeah, I'm sitting in front of buses. But, you know, here we are in 2025. And, yeah, I mean, Sam Darnold, if they would have tagged him, would have been a $40 million tag. And T. Higgins got a $26 million tag. The Bengals supposedly want to try to keep T. Higgins. And Joe Burrow is putting enormous pressure on the Bengals to keep these three big free agents that they have, Trey Hendrickson, Ja'Marr Chase. Well, Ja'Marr's not a free agent, but they want to get a deal done with him to make him the highest paid non-playing quarterback in the league. And then of course, T. Higgins. So you got four guys that make up like 30% of the salary cap.
Yeah, and I'd be surprised if they found a way to get T. Higgins to a number that he's going to be satisfied with on a long-term deal because of exactly what you said. And I think that because they have the ability to tag him again because the salary cap went up, I think the way that the Bengals are probably going to look at it is, hey, I'm sorry, T, but we are paying you a ton of money this year, and we want to go for this. We want to go and try to win a championship next year and have a healthy team, and we think we can do it. I mean, look at the way the Kansas City Chiefs just looked in the Super Bowl, for God's sakes. We think we can do this.
Yeah, with their defense. I will tell you this. He is an extremely popular player in Cincinnati. He's an extremely popular player in the locker room. Everybody loves the guy. He has taken less money to stay there. He was a second-round draft pick, which means he's under certain different rules. So instead of the fifth-year, you know, club option, where, you know, Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson will find out what that means, because Ja'Marr Chase is dealing with that right now.
Yeah.
Just like Justin Jefferson dealt with that right now. T. Higgins now, 2 years in a row, gets tagged. They're essentially screwing him. You know, he's like the 0.1% of players who get screwed, because if he would have hit free agency, he would be by far either he or Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle for the Baltimore Ravens, would be the number one pick when it comes to free agency, and everybody would be going after him. I doubt that the Bengals are going to trade him. I mean, this could happen where, you know, they have Ja'Marr Chase under control. They're going to give him a new contract, and the Bengals probably want to try to get to a 4-year, $120 million deal with T. Higgins. But if they can't do it, they may trade him, you know, and that would not make Joe Burrow very happy. But that would mean that the Bengals then would turn their attention to either a free agent wide receiver like a Davante Adams, or maybe they draft a young kid, which they've had success with in the past there in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and there's going to be a ton of suitors for T. Higgins if and when he becomes available, whether it's a trade this year or free agency next year. You know, with Sam Darnold, that's a very interesting case. And, of course, you know, the last two games, it was sort of like he turns back into a pumpkin, and that has something to do with the money that he's going to make this offseason. You know, we did this the other day, looking at some of the teams that he may go to. Like, let's say the Vikings don't want to bring him back, or it gets to a point, it could get to a point where no one else wants him and the number dwindles down and, like, you know, screw it. We will bring him back at this number, even though we didn't expect to. But there aren't a lot of landing spots for him that I think are a good match right now. And, you know, one of those, I mean, if you're someone who's not a part of New York sports and paying attention to the way things have gone the last number of years, like, people will say, oh, Sam Darnold and the Giants, like, that would be something that works. I don't think so. Him coming back here, MetLife Stadium, and all that stuff. No way.
I don't think so either. And I think that you know, what's really interesting is that yesterday, you know, because of all this discussion about the potential of Aaron Rodgers coming here, because the Giants went after Matthew Stafford, it just makes the Giants look desperate to me. But I mean, that's what they have to be. They have to be desperate because two guys are trying to keep their jobs. And I think if I were sitting in their seats, I would be trying to do everything I possibly could to get a guy like Matthew Stafford or now, okay, what's next? And what's really interesting, just watching yesterday and listening to all the stuff coming out of the combine and listening to all the different talking heads that talk football just like we do, there's this prevailing thought that somehow the Giants have told people like at the scouting combine, yeah, we're just a quarterback away. We're just a quarterback away. If we can get a real quarterback, we think we got a really good team.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the, maybe they're right. Maybe they see something we don't see.
Well,
maybe.
It depends who that quarterback is. If that quarterback is Jaden Daniels out of the draft, then maybe, because the Commanders just did it. Maybe they're looking at that situation.
Yeah, but there isn't one of these quarterbacks coming out of this draft that is that kid. That's just, they're, that.
I mean, if Josh Allen goes to the Giants, which he never would, I mean, then maybe you're a quarterback away.
But this is why, you know, the discussion is surrounding Aaron Rodgers. I'm like, he's maybe the best short-term option for them. The best short-term option for them, and again, I don't know how he fits into this offense. I don't know how they tailor the offense for him, the different things that he has been used to doing for so long. I mean, he did it his entire career in Green Bay and then did it the 2 years that he was here.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he didn't play 1 year, you know, all the practices that he had, all the practices when he came back at the end of that year, he got hurt. And you remember that was all part of the documentary and everything. Like, I just want to show you that the speed bridge works and all this other crap. And if we would have made it to the playoffs, I would have been ready to go. I mean, that was all surrounding who he was as a player, and everything was built around him. That's not who the Giants are right now. Like, the Giants aren't his offense.
No. But I would think, though, that Brian Daboll understands and Aaron Rodgers would understand that they have to meet in the middle. Like, he can't come in here and do what he's been doing, Aaron Rodgers. He just can't. And he's got to understand that, too, because, I mean, just as the Giants are desperate, it seems like Aaron Rodgers is desperate to not go out on such a low note. So if that's the case, you have to cave a little bit into saying, you know, okay, I'm not going to come in and do the Nate Hackett, Aaron Rodgers thing that I've been doing for the last million years. I got to listen to somebody else.
It's a lot, you know, with a 41-year-old kind of headstrong guy. And, like, you know, the interesting thing to me is that a number of his teammates at the Jets really wanted him back. So that tells you that people in the locker room liked him. I mean, if Quinnen Williams is coming out and saying, you know, I wish we would have kept him, or something on those lines. I mean, it tells you that they do. Like, for us in the media and for us outside the locker room and all the stuff that is surrounding him, it gives us a lot to talk about. It would be great if the Giants got him for us.
Yeah, I know. I kind of poo-poo the locker room wants him, because this is a locker room filled with guys that know nothing but losing. All of them. So what do they know about what it takes to win? So it's like, oh, we should have him back.
Seems like a lot of guys, like even like the guys that he brought here, maybe they were towards the end of their careers, and I figured they got an extra year out of it because of their friendship with Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, it seems to me like externally there's one view of him, and then internally there's, from the player's perspective, there's
players,
a different view.
Yeah, yes. I mean, and a lot of these guys that have lauded him are defensive players, by the way. You know, which have been Solomon Thomas and Quinnen Williams.
I mean, it's interesting that Garrett Wilson kind of, you know, with Devontae Adams here and the way that whole thing went down, and maybe now he's happy he's not asking for a trade. I mean, first of all, he wants a trade, then he doesn't want a trade, then he wants a contract extension. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
That's why, I mean, I think that we have overrated a lot of these players. I think that is what it comes down to, and those guys had great rookie seasons in Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner. They have not got back to that level since, and this team's just been bad.
Well, it's going to be up to Aaron Glenn to change that mindset. I mean, let me ask you this question. Just thinking about where the Jets are right now, if you had to give me, out of the 16 AFC teams, where would you rank the Jets' chances of going first to the playoffs, their chances of going to the playoffs out of the 16 teams, and then possibly going to the Super Bowl this coming year? I know you're laughing.
Yeah. I would say that the Browns...
The reason I'm asking you this is because I want to make a point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the Browns are worse. I think that the Titans have the ability to be worse. And then outside of that, I think it's difficult to find another AFC team. I think the teams in their division, every single one of them, including the Patriots, I would say have a better chance than they do. Everybody in the North has a better chance. The South, I mean, Indianapolis is kind of a mess, but I'd still take their chances. I mean,
all right, so you're talking about how this the losing permeates the locker room, and I understand that. You know, Aaron Glenn was a part of that under Richie Kotite. He saw it, and he saw the changes that were able to be made by when Bill Parcells came in. And, you know, Bill Parcells changed a lot of things, and I think Aaron Glenn is in the middle of all that. Is now the time to even consider trading high on players that are young and are really good players? We don't know how good they can be. Or do you build around those young players and see if they have the gumption and the patience to deal with losing over the next couple of years? Or do you sell high right now?
If there are teams out there that think that Garrett Wilson could be a number one wide receiver and think that they could get Sauce Gardner back to what he was when he was a rookie, then, yeah, I would trade him.
So then that would be a full-on rebuild.
Yeah.
And if you're Darren Mucci, do you have – well, I guess Rick Spielman could, you know, counsel him and help him and talk him through it. I mean, are you looking at a team that you think can win this coming year, or do you think it's now time to get rid of some of the guys that have been tainted by losing and media and scrutiny and everything else – and start a rebuild right now
with your guys,
Bill Parcells came in and, you know, he was so big and so powerful, and he was able to pretty quickly turn this thing around. Now, he kept some of the players that obviously Richie Kotite had paid, but he had quarterback issues too. He had Neil O'Donnell couldn't stay healthy. And then, you know, I'm trying to think, he had the other couple quarterbacks he had. And then he finally brought
Ray
in Vinny.
Lucas.
Ray Lucas was one. And then he had Vinny. And then he brought Vinny in. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's when the team started to take off. I'm just wondering aloud, like, if you are the Jets right now, what if you really are honest about where you are as a team with a rookie GM and a rookie head coach, is now the time to pull the plug and say, we are rebuilding and we are going to build from the ground up and try to do this? Or are these guys good enough to be able to build around, and are they patient enough not to become a pain in the ass and get in the way if you're losing next year?
Well, I mean, Quinnen Williams put it right out there. Goes, I guess we're going through another rebuild. Like, that's what they think. Because they all have a negativity around
them. Like, you don't want them turning into Myles Garrett right now.
No. You don't, but Myles Garrett has a legitimate gripe. He's an actual good player. You know what I'm saying?
I understand that, but like, that's the thing that I would worry about, and I'm sure Aaron Glenn's going to do his damnedest to convince everybody that things are going to be different, but then, because that's what every coach does.
Yeah.
That's what every new GM does. They try to reset the organization when they come in and do it in the eyes, in, you know, the way that they see it. You know, that's what Detroit had to do, and Aaron went through that with them those first 2 years.
I think, to answer your question, I think that these guys think that they can win with these players, Mucci and Glenn.
Yeah,
they think.
Yes.
But it might not be the right thing, and they might have to deal with these unhappy guys that have just gone on and on and on as losers since they've gotten there.
It's like I was saying about the Browns, and I've been saying it now for 6 weeks.
Yep.
The moment that Myles Garrett came out and said, I want to be traded, the Browns have a chance right now because of their draft capital this year, and him wanting to be traded, they have a chance to reset their franchise. Now, it's not going to be easy, and there's going to be some losing associated with that.
But they're used to that.
They're used to it, but it also gets louder and louder and louder. But to me, given all that they have going on in this draft, and I think this draft is middle rounds by most accounts, is you're getting really good players in the middle rounds of this draft as well as the top 10 players in this draft. Now is the time to reset if you're the Browns. And I just wonder if the Jets should be doing the same thing.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports.
You know,
Network.
I'm a little disgusted at you guys. You know, what kind of radio station do we work for, Al?
Sports talk.
Right. And I'm trying to talk sports with you guys in between the breaks. I'm like, nobody's paying attention to me. I feel like I'm the old grandfather in the corner just as a... Leave him alone. He's talking to himself. That's the way that you guys are treating me, man.
Wait a sec. Well, you and I were just having a knee-deep conversation about the Rangers before you turned your mic on.
No, I know. I'm not discussing with you.
You said you guys.
Well, I mean, and Gio got up and left, and I'm sitting here talking about...
Did you not experience the 24 minutes of sports talk we did on the air? that I went through, and then you went back to the same stuff. And I was like, so I'm good, man.
I started reading off Tom Seaver's stats to Eddie, and I figured, Eddie, you and I were
I was going, we got this. I was going to respond to you, yes. But then I was doing my job.
Right.
And so I didn't have a chance, and by the time I was ready to respond, you had gone off in a huff.
Right. So one of my heroes, you know, Tom Seaver, and growing up watching that guy, and I start reading off the stats, the amount of innings, the amount of starts, and it was amazing. And then the dopey Mets traded him, and I cried, and nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody.
Well, don't want to talk about you crying?
Well, I did talk about it with you on the air.
I mean, we did a little bit.
Why did we need to rehash it?
Well, I needed to further enhance my point about how many innings he pitched, how many games he started.
And that's when you went to Eddie, because I gave you an answer.
And then you got up and left.
I did.
And then Al got up and left, and then Allie came in to brush us up, and I said, Allie, will you talk sports with me? My friends don't want to talk sports with me.
That's not true. We did 24 minutes of sports talk. We went way past the break with sports, straight up sports talk. There was hockey, there was baseball, and there was football.
You guys talked hardcore hockey in the
open? Sports. Yes, hardcore sports.
Wow.
Exactly.
24 minutes.
I love sports.
I know you do.
Yes.
He was so frustrated. He comes out. He goes, let's leave with the Rangers here. Come on.
Let's go. Break it out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the only things that was going on last year.
Truly, though, when you look at general managers doing things, one of the great trades the Rangers have made is to bring JT Bilt Miller back home, at least right now.
He is
unlocked Zibanejad. He is on Will Cooley's on that line. They look like they know what they're doing. Yeah. It looks like a completely different team.
They do. If I asked you right now, I mean,
coming out of the Four Nations, they got hammered by the Sabres again.
Yeah.
Which is a mind-numbing
They were giving
thing.
Up a ton of goals those first couple of games. Yeah
I mean, it's mind-numbing that they can't beat the goddamn Sabres. But anyway, since that time, I mean, they have been unbelievable. And JT Miller has been like the linchpin for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a frustrating year at times for them. They have the second most points in the East since New Year's Day. Did you know that?
Yes, I do know that.
All right.
Well, yeah, it wasn't a frustrating night for them last night.
No,
was it
wasn't. It
for
sure
those who
wasn't.
Didn't see the game.
And as it turned out, all they needed was Will Cooley's head to win this game against the Islanders.
Zach Jones. Deflected off the helmet and in! It went off the helmet of Will Cooley and into the net! And the Rangers take a 1-0 lead!
Cilo, you know what you call that?
MSG.
That's a greasy goal off your head.
Absolutely greasy goal.
Stand in front of the net, good things happen.
That's right.
That's what I heard.
Nice to see some bounces and breaks go their way for a change, you know?
Pucks to the net.
Because the Islanders scored first on a bad goal that Igor allowed
offside.
From a bad angle, but you got the challenge, the offside challenge.
You know what was amazing about that?
Yeah.
That offside. So that was Casey Cizikas that was offside, and I love Casey. Casey's a great guy.
He was barely offside.
Barely offside, but they had Cal Clutterbuck in between periods for the Islanders. So
oh, did they?
Over. And he was like, you know, Casey needs to stay on side here. You know, he's got to realize. I'm like, man, you guys, he was your line mate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they miss Casey, Cal, and Matt. That's all I'm going to say. They don't think they're going to end up trading some guys here now, and they're going to Lou's going to move on. He has to.
Yeah.
He has to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my team, but I would just think that seems to be the prevailing thought around the team. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, the standings are stacked up, but there's a lot of teams in the mix there. Even the Rangers, they pulled even last night. Points wise, teams that have games in hand on them, so it's going to be tight down the stretch.
Of course it is, you know. And listen, the Devils got their goalie back now. Now the question is, how long is Jack Hughes going to be
that
out?
That didn't look or
it
sound
did not
good.
Look good. And that was Jack Eichel who ran him into the boards. By the way,
yeah,
I don't know if that was accidental or what.
I think
looked like it.
They got tied up. I don't think it was dirty or he didn't run him into the boards.
Nah,
they got skates tangled up.
You want star players. You want them out there, man. That's what the league needs. They need their star players on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, look, Four Nations was great, but, you know, Matt
all those guys that got hurt.
Down.
Yeah, now they put him on LTIR and bury him there, and then he'll come back and be like Superman, and they'll be over the salary cap.
Vegas has done that. They've kind of made a habit.
Vegas makes
a
living on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in any way, shape, or form, last night was another 4-0 shutout for the Rangers at the Garden. So back-to-back 4-0 shutouts, Nashville and the Islanders. You heard the Cooley goal there. Will Borgen scores shorthanded. JT Miller, who you talked
about.
We'll
see how they look against Washington come,
tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Yes. And they played Ottawa last night and I think blew a 3-0 lead.
They did.
But won in a shootout. Ugh. And Brady Tkachuk scored the game tying goal, right?
A fight between Brady Tkachuk and Tom Wilson.
Yes, I did.
America versus Canada.
Yeah.
All the Canadians were saying, you know, Tom Wilson should have been on the Canadian team so they could fight.
Yeah.
And tariff your ass off.
Isn't it a little bit of a weird dynamic, though? Yeah. Brady being as American and into that as he is, and he's the captain of a Canadian team, and they're booing
Well, Sidney Crosby's the captain of an American team.
I know, but it just feels a little different at the moment.
That's just the way it is, man. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Well, in any way, shape, or form, as you mentioned, Rangers will play Washington tomorrow. It'll be going for their first 3-game winning streak since before Thanksgiving, which is hard to believe.
The fact
that they're still in this race and they haven't won 3 games in a row since mid-November. But we'll see what happens with that. You guys touched on Luis Gil, this lat strain. So, you know, timeline-wise, you're right, no surgery or anything like that. But just for comparison, Clark Schmidt last year in late May was shut down for about 4 weeks with a lat strain. And then he finally came back to pitch in the big leagues. It was over 3 months. So that's probably the time frame that you're looking at. And apparently they've already compared notes on what that was like for Schmidt and what he'll will deal with here and see if he can get himself back middle of the year. Yanks on the mind of Orioles fan Diane as she took in Baltimore spring training game, which was broadcast on ESPN.
Here you go. Give me a prediction about the American League East. Who's going to win it?
I have great fears of the Skankies because they are, they're loaded. They'll buy their way out of anything.
Well, I mean, you can't say that as much about them these days, but the Skankies. Yeah.
Peter Schwartz called them the Skankies once.
Yeah, he did.
He's a Yankees fan.
Did he really?
Yeah. On the home of the Yankees here, WFAN, the radio home. It was shocking.
And why did he call
Skankies?
Them? Skankies.
Yeah.
See? Oh, it was just a misspeak. Okay.
Skankies.
See?
Oh, you call it a misspeak. I heard Skankies, and that's really what matters.
Heard it. I heard it, but she clearly intended to call them the Skankies.
Yeah, well, we don't really know Peter's intent.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair.
They're just interviewing fans on that broadcast? That's what they're doing?
I don't know. It was one of these things that went viral yesterday, a little 12-second clip. But yeah, I think Buster Olney was out there talking to the people in the stands.
Well, at least it didn't happen in 2015.
Yeah, but the thing about that, Holt, so do you know the deal with this?
I know that Jerry played something that was a year old yesterday. I know about the 2015 situation.
When you heard Jerry play it, were you like, what is Jerry doing?
No. No, I support Jerry. These things happen. Okay. Things slip through the cracks.
So how do you feel about this? Because there was a story from 2015 that he presented to us as something more recent because this guy, Rob Conrad, was on a podcast talking about it.
Okay.
And it was interesting.
Yeah, this
I heard him say it happened 10 years ago.
Okay. You know? Do you think he knew that it happened 10 years ago?
I don't.
Or he saw it on the podcast and figured this was something recent.
Yeah, I think yesterday he said, it was probably like 6 months ago or something.
He is basically saying, and I understand it too, because it happens to me too. You get an update or a notification from YouTube that this is up.
Right.
And they know what your algorithm is and they may send it to you, and it may be a story that somebody is telling about what happened 15 years ago, but they don't really get into it. Like, you don't know that that's the
they don't
case.
Set it up for you.
Yeah. Right, because you're only getting a clip of it.
Right.
And this really bothers a great listener and fact checker, Joey from Yonkers. This is really eating at him. So much so that he went back on the internet and found a recap of Jerry's update.
Oh, I did see this morning. Yeah.
From 2015. Where he mentioned this.
Oh, come on.
We used to write the blog for the morning show.
Right. It says, Dolphin fullback Rob Conrad talks about his 16-hour survival swim.
Man, Joey, that is awesome. That is awesome.
And then he was texting me, begging me to try to find the audio. And I'm like, I don't think, because Jerry could easily defend this one. He goes, what he's going to say is, it doesn't matter when it happened.
Yeah.
The audio was new and the audio was interesting. And I am on Jerry's side with that.
Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, but the fact that we had talked about, but then again, we've talked about a million things here. I can't remember anything. I can't remember what we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, no, I know. It's tough.
In the open.
Yeah, I just.
The only thing I can know is that Jerry played something that
was a year old.
Or 15 years.
Yeah, the George Carl thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a year.
And you guys had to come back and clean that up for him. I did hear that.
And he defended that too. And he
as
also,
well as his winter take.
Winter take.
Yeah. Yeah, I stand with Jerry about a lot of things. The winter take, I'm on the complete opposite side of Jerry on that one. So that's frustrating. It is, and hopefully it'll warm up. I mean, I know the temperature's during the daytime, but like when you get out of the car down here and the winds kick in and it feels like it's in the teens.
Winter not over.
that doesn't suggest spring in any way, shape, or form. One more thing before I go. The Mets spring training game kind of irrelevant to the point where in the dugout last night on SNY, guys were having a good time, Juan Soto included. He's with some of his new teammates, Starling Marte, Francisco Alvarez, and the SNY crew of Ron Darling and Steve Gelbs would take notice.
Messing around the dugout. As long as there is baseball in spring training, they'll be messing around in the dugout. One of the best parts of spring training.
It's nice to see Soto in there right off the bat, too.
Yeah, you just have to watch out, though, because you could get waffled by a foul ball if you're not paying attention.
What are they doing here?
Now, at the end, and CBS Sports Network's running the clip here, I'm seeing if you guys can see the part at the end here when they ask, what are they doing? It kind of got a little, some of the motions were a little awkward and unusual to the point where maybe CBS Sports Network decided to cut that part out. So that's what they were responding to. They were doing a little bit of a dance, we'll call it that, with some gyrations.
Okay.
It looked a little... looked a little unusual.
Sexual in nature?
Yeah, I would say. I'm not saying that's what they were going for.
Okay.
But it appeared that way. But the boys are having fun, and that's all you care about, right?
Camaraderie.
Especially
with a guy who's making more money than everybody standing there combined. You need that camaraderie.
100%.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Fred Tutcher is a Boston morning show host who's had a ton of success in this business. He was with Rich Sternlieb for a long time, Tutcher and Rich, and then those guys went their separate ways, made big news, but Fred Tutcher's still on BZ up there in Boston, the sports hub, doing very well, and he made some news yesterday when he started ripping Pat McAfee. You don't see a lot of people going after Pat McAfee, maybe some wrestling people or people who were mad at his Canadian takes when he was doing a wrestling thing, but people in the industry generally have lauded the success of Pat McAfee, but Fred Tutcher comes out and says, Pat McAfee sucks, he said.
God,
once you work for the Disney company, any cool rebellious factor that you might be hanging on to is long gone. I am jealous about how he leveraged garbage views on YouTube into a really lucrative TV gig. And he also said he was brilliant to pay Aaron Rodgers $1 million a year to do his show because that's the only thing people talked about. All right, a couple of things in there. I don't think Pat McAfee sucks. I think that his success... you don't get that many jobs, get paid that much money if you're doing a terrible job. You don't. And he continues to get jobs. He continues to make news. He continues to be entertaining for a lot of people. But the two interesting things in there, I think that, and some we've talked about too, that those Aaron Rodgers interviews propelled him in a huge, huge way. And there's no doubting that. And he knows that as well. So that is certainly a factor, how a lot of people learned about his show, and he brought in a lot of people because of how much news Aaron Rodgers was making on his show. Now, the thing that, and I'll bring Al in here too, that the garbage YouTube views thing, like he said, he leveraged the garbage YouTube views. Now, we've talked about fudging podcast numbers a lot, but I felt like YouTube views was something we could actually look at and say, you know, that sort of makes sense. That is tangible. I trust the views on YouTube.
Yeah, I do trust the views on YouTube. I took that as him saying Aaron Rodgers got those views on YouTube for you. You took that and now have a career. That's the way I took
it. Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, that's different then.
All right. So, you know, I did work with Fred Tutcher. And Tutcher and Rich up there at WBC for about 7-8 years as I was ping-ponging back and forth with WEEI up there on Monday mornings. And just because of our own company and who owns it, who sold it, who worked, I mean, like, and I was moving all around. It was crazy. And Eddie knows all this crap. But, and Freddie's a great guy. He's a great guy to work with. What he says also in there, he goes, I'm jealous.
Yeah,
right. He admits it. And that I do appreciate about Freddie. The one thing about him, he's always gave an honest opinion. Nothing was manufactured. And the thing about the whole Pat McAfee thing is, remember, he started like almost the bar stool himself. Like, it was a lot of cussing, a lot of like guy talk, a lot of football.
Well, he was
talk.
With Barstool.
Yeah, all right.
Well, then he left. Yeah.
Right. So, and then it grew. And then he convinced Jimmy Pitaro of ESPN, hey, listen, let me sell myself and my show to you guys. I'll keep half of it on YouTube, and I'll put the other half on ESPN. And when we go on ESPN, it'll be a little bit more mainstream, and you guys can pick up all the money and all the back you know, office crap that I don't want to have to deal with. And I give him a lot of credit. And,
yeah.
And now he's actually ingratiated himself to the college football fan because of College Football Saturday.
Yeah, and this is one where I can't necessarily take a side on because I respect both of those guys and what they've done in the business.
But
and
he
both
says been, he's jealous, so it's not yeah, like it's not.
But
like
he also
not,
said he sucks.
Well, I think because maybe he appreciated the Barstool Pat McAfee as opposed to the ESPN Pat McAfee,
yeah.
Which is, it changes.
I suppose. Maybe, and I don't know if there's any personal interaction between the two that we don't know about, but I respect both of their careers in a major way because they've had a ton of success, and you know it's really hard to be on top as long as Fred Tucher has been in morning radio like that in a big market. And also with Pat McAfee, the thing that he did a couple of times is he left and bet on himself. Like he didn't have, he left Barstool and had nothing there and then got convinced FanDuel to do the show. And then he left FanDuel to go to ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow it, I mean, it's a pretty remarkable story and it's a huge success story.
And he's taking care of all his employees too.
Right. And he is right about the Aaron Rodgers things. I've said that here.
Yeah, yeah.
I've said that was, you know, must watch TV when he was with the Green Bay Packers. And it turned out to be must watch TV when he was with the Jets. And that was more on mainstream ESPN, which is what ESPN was paying for. But then they got more than they bargained for. You know, they put him on College Game Day. You know, he's, you know, obviously he was at the Combine with the NFL Network. I was watching him there this week because he's obviously in Indianapolis. That's where he lives. And look, you cannot discount that success. That's real success. That's real money. That's real impact. And, you know, and Freddie said he's jealous. He sucks, but he's jealous. You know why he thinks he sucks? Because he's not the Barstool FanDuel Pat McAfee. He's the mainstream ESPN media Pat McAfee, which he has to adjust.
Yeah, well, I don't think that
listen, I've been called Boomer Sunday Boomer and Weekday Boomer.
Yeah, 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 Weekend Boomer and Weekday
whatever,
Boomer.
Whatever, right? Sunday, whatever. Yeah. I mean, you have to adjust to where you are and who you're sitting with.
Yeah, but I don't think that it was total, like, he didn't go from Sam Kinison to Mickey Mouse. Like, I do think there are parts of his show where he's still, they still curse, they still do certain things. So, I don't know. It hasn't been a full turn in that way. But of course, yes, it depends what platform you're on. And, you know, you make a lot of money in a place, you're going to follow some of the rules.
Hey,
but he also went rogue and went after that Norby Williamson thing, too. And he ended up winning that battle.
Exactly.
So well,
and he also got himself in trouble last week with the Ole Miss student.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right. You know, it's the world we live in. It's the media landscape these days. But again, like I said he's jealous. So I think part of that is a compliment.
Yeah.
And he says he sucks because he's not what he was when he was doing, you know, when he was not on ESPN.
Yeah.
He has to conform to a certain degree to the expectations of ESPN and falling within their purview.